Welcome to Houston Sports Talk with your host, Robert Land.
Thanks for checking into the best Houston sports podcast. And joining me is friend of the show, Kenny Van Doren. You've seen him on here before a few months ago. He co-hosts the Astros Future podcast as a contributor to your best source on the Astros minor league system, astrosfuture.com. It's great to see you, Kenny. And I'm guessing spring training, it's pretty close to the Christmas season for you.
Yeah, it's I would say spring training, Rule 5 draft. I've had a lot of people joke that that's my favorite day of the year, and it kind of is. You see a lot of new guys come in, you see some familiar faces leave, and spring training is when all these faces I've been watching for the last year get to be on the big stage and in front of a lot of fans and evaluators that don't really get to see them very often, and so it's a very exciting time for me.
Astros fans are not used to a roster battle in recent years in the bullpen, not many openings going into spring training. Typically, but this year it feels pretty wide open beyond Presley, Hader, Abreu, and Montero. What's it look like for those last couple of spots? And have any of the young guys you've been following over the last few years shown you anything?
Yeah, I think one guy that came to mind on the prospect side, looking at some of those guys, is Mesa Altamirez, who's been a starter more recently, had the profiled fastball and pitches similar to Christian Javier. Sorry about the dogs barking, but that's where it's just kind of been. Is like, you know, he looked like a great starter, ran into a rough patch last season, hit the injured list, undisclosed injury, comes back, has a 1-10 record. But if you talk to the Space Cowboys, talk to Garrett Green, who's the broadcaster down there in Sugarland, the toughest 1-10 you've ever seen. The guy was just not getting much run support. He was going deep. Five innings in the PCL, which can sometimes be really hard. His ERA was better than the average in the PCL, and it's a very hitter-friendly league. And I liked what Mizial was doing. But moving forward, I think it might behoove the Astros to kind of look at him as a reliever, just kind of see what you can get out of him. They did a similar thing with JP France back in 2022, just kind of giving him some looks out of the bullpen if they needed a guy late, just because he has that fastball that he can dial up. Mizial Tamirez is in a similar situation. A rough first outing, the second outing was better, then the third outing gave up another home run. He's not on the 40-man roster, but that's a guy I'm kind of looking at moving forward. Seth Martinez looks like he's completely changed himself. He's had a good spring so far. We know he's had struggles against lefties, but back in 2022, it was a numbers game. It was one of the best bullpens in Astros history, and he was left out. Last year, didn't have the best second year at the major league level, spent some time in Sugarland as well. I think he is definitely on the up and up and making that bullpen. I've always kind of liked what Bennett Sousa did. Bennett Sousa was great last year. But really, of the younger guys, there's just not really anyone on the 40-man roster that is a prospect pitcher at the moment, except Forrest Whitley, who is still not throwing. That would be the one guy I would try to talk up and see if he could make it.
We've seen Spencer Arrighetti pitch. You followed him. Is Spencer Arrighetti the best young arm in the system who could potentially contribute this season? How ready is he?
Of the top pitching prospects in the Astros system, Spencer is number one. He's the one that's had the time and had everything he needed in AAA. It seems kind of similar to what Hunter Brown was 2 years ago, going into spring training, maybe some talks about how he'll break the roster. But why put the guy on the roster if he's not going to start necessarily? But with Justin Verlander starting the season on the injured list, still waiting to see if JP France will be ready for the start of the season, Spencer Arrighetti could be is definitely in that conversation. Looking at, you know, your starting options behind Hunter Brown at the back end of that rotation, you know, where can we find starts for Spencer? You know, we don't want him to just come out and just throw one inning outings when we know that he can give you two or three, even a full start in some capacities. Still not on the 40-man roster, of course. If he gets added to the 40-man, you have to be called up. But out of all those guys, those top pitching prospects in the system, Spencer is probably the most MLB ready.
Dana Brown loves Ronel Blanco from everything that he has said. Do you love Ronel Blanco?
Hey, you know, I love watching minor league baseball, and he does great in the minor leagues. It's not always going to translate at the major league level. Sometimes there is that category of the 4A player, someone who's just caught in between the AAA and major league level, and that kind of feels like Ronel. Props to Dana Brown for finding out a guy that used to be a starter, became more of a dominant closer at the AAA level, and then see something that, you know, we can bring him back to starter potential. He does great in spring training. You just can't, you know, there's always that one darling, Justin Dearden last year, Miles Straw a couple years ago, Yuli Gurriel in 2022. You know, we had a great spring training, didn't translate. And sometimes that happens. And I don't know if Ronel will be in that conversation that at the end of the year didn't translate again. He is on the older side. You know, I think the Astros do give him some runs, some spot starts. Definitely can give you that. They ran into some trouble last year about optioning him too much because they just kept bringing him up for those opportunities. I'm not, you know, over the top about Ronel Blanco. I don't think he's a guy who sticks in the rotation necessarily, but he definitely brings you that depth that you'll need when you wait for guys like Lance McCullers, Luis Garcia, and Justin Verlander to get healthy.
You have watched the progression of Hunter Brown back to his minor league days. He had a really solid first half last season. Were his second half issues just the new major league workload, or do you see bigger problems?
Yeah, this happens a lot. Guys just get tired. When you're pitching in the minor leagues, and I think maybe the Astros wanted to do that with Hunter Brown back in the 2022 season before they called him up in September. A full healthy year, get like consistent starts, consistent outings out of the bullpen, get him built up. But when you go through your first full season, don't go down to the minor leagues, you're going all the way through, it can take a toll on you. It can take a toll on anyone. And I think that's where it kind of was. Just kind of gets gassed at one point of the season, and then you just fall back because – at the end of the day, it is a mental game. And I think that's something that can affect him. And, you know, this is where you go into year two, take those issues necessarily from last year, things that you learned, and you just kind of morph it into a better second season.
There should be a couple of bench spots available. I've counted 11 definites, basically the 9 starters, Caratini and Mauricio Dubon. Trey Cabbage and Greg Kessinger are getting the most at-bats of the potential candidates so far. How do you see this playing out, and is anybody impressing you of the young guys?
The big conversation I've seen, especially on social media, is Joey Lorbrufido, who's not on the 40-man roster, 7th-round pick out of Duke back in 2021. We've seen some great at-bats from him, some shots to center field, pulling the ball, going opposite field. You know, personally, I do like the way his swing looks. I'm a big fan of the lefty swing. And if they want that lefty bat, a guy who can play second base, first base, and all 3 outfield positions, maybe look to Lorbrufido. But at the same time, if he's going to be someone that contributes down the road, you know, why make him just sit behind Mauricio Dubon as the second guy and make him sit 4, 5, 6 days, you know, even 6 days a week? Right now, I'm necessarily, you know, he's still in major league camp. They haven't reassigned him yet. Still trying to look at it, weigh those options, because you have the lefty options in Singleton and Cabbage on the 40-man roster. And for Singleton, I don't believe he can be optioned again. I think it's been, you know, years since he's had that last option year. So there's really, this is last opportunity to make the roster. You're getting DFA. You're not going to be on the 40-man roster anymore. For Trey Cabbage, it's definitely, you know, a second chance with the Astros. We've heard Joe Spada talk highly about him, you know, trying to put everything together after what they saw in Los Angeles. Espada's talked highly about Joey Lorbrufido as well. I think that's the one thing I like about what Espada brings that maybe Dusty Baker didn't talk about necessarily, was talking more about those prospects, the guys he's seeing in camp, and being completely honest with how they're playing and what they need to improve on if they want to make it. I do think Kessinger locks in one of those spots just because he can play all 4 infield positions, and he can give you, you know, above average defense at shortstop and third base, which is what you're looking for out of him. But if you need that first base option, Joey Lorbrufido probably has more experience there than Kessinger and Dubon. It's still a work in progress, I will say that. Vladimir Sutil, the development coach down there in Sugarland, when I was there at the end of the summer last year, was still working with Joey Lorbrufido on just kind of his footwork. Second base is also coming to him a little bit better. He worked a lot with Joe Thon, who's the manager in AA.
Give us kind of a breakdown of Lorbrufido. Like, what are his strengths and weaknesses, and what do you see as far as his future? Does he have a position, a regular position in Major League Baseball?
Yeah, with, you know, the position addition, playing first base and second base, I still think there's a lot to work on there. Guys like Corey Jolks, people may not know this, played a lot of third base before he got called up with the Astros, has not done well with the Astros. And maybe the first base, maybe second base gets thrown out of the equation. First base likely to stick there for Joey, just given his size. He got up to AAA last year. Numbers weren't necessarily the best. And that's where he kind of just run into the toll of the regular season. It was his longest season in his pro career, 124 games. Ended the season, though, with an 880 OPS, 736 in the PCL. Also, thing to mention, the PCL, he's playing at the probably one of the toughest minor league parks ever created in Sugarland, which is just a pitcher's paradise. And it's even funnier that it's in the PCL to begin with. But great season in AA, and I think the Texas League makes and breaks a lot of hitters. And Joey Lorbrufido, it made him 940 OPS, 296 batting average. Maybe just want to knock down on some of those strikeouts if he starts in AAA next year. And I think that will definitely come with time, and it'll be a lot easier with a fresh start to the year and not just come up in those last 2 months. So I think that's something he'll improve on. But he can just hit it to all fields, and that's what really just what impressed me about Lorbrufido. You know, a lot of some guys that bigger stature, lefties, are just going to pull everything. He has a good, like, opposite field swing, kind of like Jacob Melton. They can both push it. They can pull it. They can hit it to all fields. On the defensive side of the ball, I think the future is in center field, maybe right field. The throws weren't necessarily the best from right field, but he said it multiple times now, and this is one of my favorite quotes I've ever heard. He loves football. Big, big football fan. He calls himself a safety out there. And that's, he just loves to be able to track balls down, just kind of, you know, see everything in front of him. And that's what he has, like, this vision for the field that a lot of people don't talk about. And I think that's where Joey excels. Maybe you can put him in left field and center field moving forward, and he can just track down anything. And that's kind of like the plus on the defensive side for him.
You were talking about him playing a little bit of third, but he didn't play much third. I want to ask you about Will Wagner, because he was already assigned to minor league camp, so he's out of the mix right now, but I've heard his spot appraise him in a couple of interviews in the last couple of weeks. What's his potential? What's Wagner's? And if they can't re-sign Bregman, is he the best in-house option at third base, or is it maybe Zach DiCenza or something like that?
Yeah, baseball's a lot of what ifs, and I think Wagner would be deeper into camp right now if he didn't have the Hammett injury last year and lost a month or two in Double A. Because look at Will Wagner's numbers; it was a pretty incredible stretch there in the Texas League, batting 309 with an 892 OPS in 53 games. Got that injury, came up for 1 week, and I went to a couple of games when he came up for that final week when he was in Sugarland. And he hit 577 in a week. Yeah, I mean, it's a small sample size. He was the best hitter in the PCL in just 1 week. And everyone's pretty bullish around the organization about him. Mike Ramazzotti, who is the infield coordinator, he was a development coach back in 2022 for the Asheville Tourists. He called him the athletic Max Muncy. And that was just something that's always stood out to me. It hasn't been said as often these days, but he just has this athleticism and just lefty pop that they kind of compared to Max Muncy. It was during spring training once that it was a velo day and he was throwing the ball and he was throwing it a lot harder than everyone else from third base. And they were just like, why did you not play third base in college? We have you listed as a second baseman. He was like, they just put me at second base at Liberty. You know, I didn't have the choice. It was just where I played, kind of found this untapped potential as a fielder. And he's been playing well at third base and maybe not an above average defender, but definitely can give you good innings at the position. Moving forward, it's just Will Wagner's just reliable. And that's what I've said. It's kind of a steal in the 18th round. Of course, he has the ties to the organization with his dad. But moving forward, this is the competition this year. You know, if Bregman's going to leave, if Bregman's going to find a contract elsewhere, it's between him and Zach DiCenza. Zach DiCenza was a shortstop in college at Ohio State, has not played a single inning at shortstop at the pro level. He even made a joke that the Astros listed him as an outfielder on accident. So, I mean, he's kind of, you know, trying to find that position, but it is third base right now. I think he profiles a little bit better as a first baseman. He's just such a big guy and he just moves well for how big he is. I want to see it, you know, a lot more. We'll be watching a lot more when he's in likely AAA this season at some point, and we'll get a better feel from both those guys, and they'll probably be on the same roster battling for the same job in 2025. And right now, you know, I'm definitely going to lean Will Wagner that takes over that job if they go in-house and if Bregman leaves. But don't cancel, you know, don't say that DiCenza can't do it. He fits everything the Astros want in size and high exit velocities.
What do you think of the Astros, the way they move guys around so much in different positions? And do you ever hear from these guys that they don't like being moved around a lot? Or do they feel like, hey, this gives me a better chance of getting into the major leagues?
Yeah. Chandler Rome had a good story about it with Pedro Leon, and Mickey Story, who was one of those guys, was very bullish about Will Wagner when I talked to him. Mickey Story is the most open guy in the system. We'll tell you how it is. It'll shoot you straight. And he said it with Pedro Leon is that maybe, you know, the Astros did the wrong thing about putting him at shortstop, has this plus arm, and it didn't really help him out in the infield. And even at second base, he really just wasn't finding it, moving strictly full time to the outfield. Now there's still some worries that, you know, he isn't the best premier outfielder that he was when they signed him back in 2021. So sometimes position addition can do that to guys, especially those ones that have a lot of hype behind their names and Pedro Leon. But then reading that article from Chandler, he talked to Pedro Leon. Pedro Leon didn't say it really bothered him much because, I mean, a lot of these guys aren't going to point fingers. And I think that's kind of the culture the Astros have built. And Double A and with Joe Thon and the Hooks, that's where it's just kind of, you know, has been, in my opinion, where they have this like culture of, you know, we're going to do everything we can to get to the major leagues. You know, a lot of these guys know they're not, you know, they're not getting the hype as top 100 prospects and have all this, you know, flashy stuff behind their names. They just want to contribute and they don't care about where they were drafted. They don't care where they're going to play. They want to be at Minute Maid Park. And that's kind of like the culture of where they are. Zach DiCenza will play second base if that means he's going to play in the major leagues. He said it multiple times, you know, it's just, you know, we're going to do what we can. And same guys with Joey Loperfido. Rhett Koba is probably the best example of that in the pitching side. I've talked to his family members as well. He will do everything he can to be at like some of these strength camps when he doesn't need to. Like after a full season last year, hit an innings limit, they put him on the development list. Just, you know, this is your end of your year. He goes to West Palm Beach for 2 weeks and goes to a strength camp. He gets to spring training a month in advance before he's there for as a non-roster invitee to go to these camps and be ready because he just wants to be on the field. And that's where kind of the culture is with the Astros. You know, there might be some guys, you know, pushing one way. He's like, you know, this is a position I want, you know, I think I can excel at. A lot of them just want to keep moving up. And that's just where it is. And it's kind of like the mindset for a lot of these minor leaguers.
Espada has also praised Jacob Melton. That's another guy. You know, I remember he specifically went out of his way to praise Loperfido, Will Wagner, and Jacob Melton. And Melton was reassigned to minor league camp as well. But if Jake Myers doesn't show improvement in the first 2 months from what we've seen in the last couple of years, is Melton the most likely candidate to get a shot at center field?
Dana Brown is very bullish about those two picks back in 2022. And remember it, he tried to push Drew Gilbert to fight for that starting job. And we didn't even see Drew Gilbert in spring training. He didn't even play in the Grapefruit League back in 2022. And his only spring training with the Astros. Getting into this part of like minor league baseball and just baseball in general, and sometimes you're just going to push guys as, you know, as fast as you can. It's like we're getting back to the days of, I forget his name, but back in like the Rangers had a prospect from that was played high school baseball in Houston, I think at Westchester High School, which is no longer a thing. And the Clyde,
David Clyde.
Yeah. And they pushed him in immediately. And it's not necessarily to that extent. You're going to give guys, you know, some looks, but if a pitcher's throwing 100 miles an hour, what, you know, is he going to learn command in the minor leagues, or is he going to learn command in the major leagues with major league staff? You know, it's stuff like that. So many questions. And, you know, running through it, you know, they're going to look at Jacob Melton and be like, you know, what else does he have to prove kind of in the minor leagues? Well, you know, we want to see him, you know, up his on base percentage a little bit. You know, when he's on base, he's stealing bases. And that's the thing. He's not clogging the base paths. He's moving up. And that's a guy kind of like, you know, Kyle Tucker. He has the power. He has the speed. And it's sneaky speed from Jacob Melton. It's kind of like Tucker as well. You look at Tucker. Yeah, he's a skinny, slender guy. But looking at him, you're like, oh, you know, does he have this speed, this untapped speed that we don't know about? Jacob Melton has it. He has the speed. He has the power. Plays, you know, some fairly good defense as well. And moving forward, you know, he's definitely gonna be a guy they're gonna keep their eyes on. I think he starts in Double A though to start the year. Texas League is great, in my opinion. Sometimes I just think the PCL is just a placeholder for your 40 man guys or just former major leaguers still trying to make it back. But I think right now he starts in a Double A, and if, you know, push comes to shove, you know, he definitely is in the wings if Jake Myers or whoever's playing center field down the line isn't contributing well.
Drew Gilbert was drafted in that first round, same draft as Jacob Melton. Melton wasn't drafted much behind Drew Gilbert. What's the difference between those two guys? Because everybody was, you know, really a little scared of giving up Drew Gilbert and the Justin Verlander deal, but Jacob Melton has a lot of the same tools. Is there a huge difference talent-wise between the two, do you think?
I think they're two completely different lefty outfielders, and I think that was a good thing that they did. They got their guy. They got a guy in Drew Gilbert who just was like the model of what an Astros player should have been over the last couple of years. Everyone hated this organization from outside of it. It wasn't really much respect. You got a guy who was getting tossed from college baseball games, from arguing with umpires. He plays with this fire. He hits home runs, spikes his bat, and he was just a fiery guy. And you know, they always said he played with his hair on fire. Jacob Melton's very reserved. Jimmy Price, who's the host of Astros Future, told me when he talked to him, he didn't really want to talk. It's just, that's just who he is. He seems like a fun teammate. A lot of the guys in the organization rave about him as a person, but at the same time, he just puts his head down. He plays. Drew Gilbert can be the same way, but he plays with that fire. I mean, he's going to show his emotion, and that's where kind of the difference is there. Two different complete sizes as well. But internally, you know, I've heard some things as well that Jacob Melton was, you know, had that kind of that step on Drew Gilbert in the internal rankings. You know, you look at Baseball America, MLB Pipeline, everything else, Fangraphs, and everything has Drew Gilbert ahead of him last season. Internally, the Astros were leaning more to Melton, and that was the guy they liked, and they fit a better mold for the future. That was the first time that they had, you know, first round and second round picks. And over the last, I think, six drafts, they haven't picked higher than 28 in the first round. And that kind of leads you to not getting guys that are MLB ready right away, or maybe like, you know, a year and a half, a year in the minor leagues ready to go up, because you're not picking some of these premier outfielders, you know, premier infielders from the college ranks. And you're kind of getting some of these other college players who end up being really well. You know, Jacob Melton was the best player in the Pac-12 the year he was drafted. I think they're, you know, very different players in that sense. I think Jacob Melton can hit it to all fields a little bit better. Maybe doesn't have the power, the fire that Drew Gilbert played with when he was in the Astros system. But internally, what I've heard, Melton kind of had that step on Gilbert in the eyes of the Astros brass.
Is there anybody that we haven't mentioned that you think is going to maybe make a move this year in the Astros organization that people are going to start talking about? I mean, Luis Baez was somebody that we kind of started talking a little bit about last year, and then he played a little bit in spring training. Is somebody like him or somebody else that you have in mind that you think is going to be maybe the talk of the Astros farm system this year?
Yeah, for Luis Baez, of course, he put on a show in the DSL in his first year, and then last year did it again at the rookie level in the FCL. I think he kind of threw out his shoulder in some way in one of the games that he was playing. He had a really hard swing, and he kind of came up and was holding it and just kind of, you know, favoring it. Missed a couple games, came back. Probably not the best start to affiliated ball that he wanted, and I think he'll be back with guys like Andrew Cressy, who's now the hitting coach in Fayetteville, who was his hitting coach in the FCL, kind of working with those guys closely again with his coaches and kind of push him towards Asheville sooner or later. We know he can probably rake when he gets to the South Atlantic League. One guy that's really, you know, stood out to me is Alberto Hernandez, who I like remember before he was even signed. I remember watching him, great defender, kind of an average bat right when he came in the DSL in 2022. Gets to the FCL in 2023. A little bit surprised that it happened so fast. just after, you know, kind of a poor hitting performance. And, you know, we're not going to take the rookie level hitting performances and truly dissect them, because in the DSL and FCL, errors are abundant, mistakes are abundant. It's not very clean baseball. It's a lot of, you know, just learning processes and making things better. But Dana Brown went out of his way to mention Alberto Hernandez, infielder in the FCL right now. He's only 20 years old, for a Cuban-born prospect, and a lot of Cuban-born baseball player. And I know a lot of fans around the system and fans of the Astros always like to know about, you know, who's the next Cuban guy, because Yuli Gurriel and Pedro Leon were kind of like the faces of that over the last couple of years. And with Alberto Hernandez, he compared him kind of to Vaughn Grisham, just as a better defender. And we know Dana Brown came from the Braves, and finding Vaughn Grisham was, you know, this unheralded thing that the Braves did. And, you know, he's with the Red Sox now, but he talked about it. Great hands, can hit the ball well. Last year, he really upped his doubles in 16 less games. And so Alberto Hernandez, definitely a guy to keep your eye on. Andrew Cressy, who was a hitting coach down there in the FCL, will probably have his hands on Alberto again when he comes to single A. And I think he'll start the season in single A, and maybe not have, you know, an abundance of opportunities right off the bat, just because he is a little bit younger, just kind of ease him into it. But the Astros seem pretty high on him. And you can tell under Dana Brown, you can start to see, like, a lot of the guys in his front office, a lot of the guys that are getting into these games early that aren't non-roster invitees, maybe some guys the Astros are evaluating for those non-roster invitees moving forward. We saw a lot of Shea Whitcomb last year, and it wasn't the best season, coming off the best season in 2022. Definitely got better as a defender, not as a hitter. Turns it around as a hitter after that. And so maybe there's a lot of guys that they're looking at right now, they're giving a lot of opportunities to. And Alberto Hernandez is definitely getting, you know, a handful of looks in the Grapefruit League. And I think that's the guy you want to keep your eyes on.
Last guy I want to mention, and I mentioned this guy because if you go to Sugarland, you might want to get his autograph, but not because I think he's going to be a great baseball player. And I think, Kenny, you might agree with me on this, but this guy could be a legit country music star. If you haven't heard of Luke Berryhill's Road to the Show, go check it out on YouTube. He just did a song that really is one of the best songs, maybe the best song you'll ever hear about getting that road into minor league baseball, trying to make it to the major leagues, and one of the best baseball songs that I've ever heard. But I think you've had a chance to talk to Luke, haven't you?
Yeah, I think I've talked to Luke the last couple years now. He's been with the system since the 2021 season when they traded for him for Cnel Perez, who ended up being a pretty good reliever for the Orioles. Didn't even really pan out with the Reds, but I've talked to Luke for a while now. You know, back in 2021, he was the minor league Astros minor league player of the year. I think some people forget that he was a legit prospect. Kind of got slowed by some injuries in 2022, and probably not the best season that he wanted in 2023. But yeah, I mean, he's done great at that. I mean, props to him for being able to balance a second career, not even just going to call it a hobby, because he's making money off of what he's doing. And his dad sang music as well. His dad's a very humble guy, and, you know, is very supportive of what his son's trying to accomplish. And for Luke, it's like just like every other day. He's just he's the same way, straight arrow, very humble about what he's doing. And before the game on Tuesday, the person who was scheduled to sing the national anthem was unable to do it, is what he was told an hour before. And they asked him, and he was like, yeah, I'll do it. Well, what person will just do that on an hour's notice? And that's just the character of Luke Berryhill and who he is, right? Yeah, it's a pretty impressive what he's accomplishing.
Yeah, great stuff from him. I just love his music, Dance on It. I think might have been the first single that he put out. Was really good. And I've listened to that one many, many times. So I love him. I'm not, you know, a country music fan, like hardcore, but I do like some country, and his stuff is really good. It's worth a listen. And also, Kenny, remind everybody how to find you and all your content. Let everybody know what you're working on right now.
You can follow me on Twitter at The Vandalorian. It's like The Mandalorian from Star Wars, but with a V. You know, listen to the Astros Future podcast with me and Jimmy Price, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find any of his work on astrosfuture.com, and hopefully we'll be turning out some more interviews for you guys to listen to here soon.
Always great to have you on, man. M-I-Z.
M-I-Z.
You're listening to Houston Sports Talk.
Hey, don't forget to support us by subscribing and commenting on YouTube. You can always listen to us on Spotify, Apple, or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends about us and share our show links on social media. Spread the word, everybody. Thanks for listening.